Rates will be cheap.
Yeah.
Step of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Good evening. If you'll call the roll, please.
Chairman John Sorgenfrey.
Here.
Vice Chairman Ted Ehring.
Here.
Commissioner Bradford Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Mark Burns.
Here.
Commissioner Chris Vargas.
Here.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to accept tonight's agenda?
So moved.
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 We have a set of minutes to approve from October 11th, 2005. Very lengthy set of minutes.
can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, when we arrived here, there's another set of minutes, and I don't know if those are revised minutes or the minutes that was in our packet.
This is the set that was emailed to you.
How were they different? They are different than the set that was in the packet.
There were differences related to the secondary dwelling unit discussion.
I received a second message from Elsa that said to cancel the ones that were sent.
She sent one, tried to recall it, didn't work,
yeah.
And then sent another set. And that is the same as what you see here.
I didn't get that set, and this is the first time I've seen this set.
Mr. Chairman, can we...
I'd like to delay these.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to delay these to the next meeting. I have an opportunity to go over them.
Okay.
These are...
Okay. All those in... you want to make a motion to delay...
Yeah, I'll also move.
To delay it to the next meeting?
To delay it to the next
second.
Meeting.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, we'll review those next meeting. Next set of item on our agenda is for public comment period. This is a time for the public to speak on anything that's not on our agenda tonight. Anyone have anything to say that's not on our agenda? Okay, we'll close the public comment period.
I have something, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I was driving down through the city today, and on, I think, it's Dolliver Street. Okay, on Dolliver Street, there seems to be, on vacant land, people storing asphalt and piles, dirt, sand, rock. I don't know what it is. And it kind of looks tacky downtown, and I was just wondering what the purpose of that was.
What it is engineering department and the city council has awarded a contract to Valley Slurry Seal to slurry seal a majority of the streets in town. That's their staging lot for all that equipment. That's why today there was a lot of trucks there.
Okay, now what about across the street on the Edgewater piece of property? There's a big pile of broken up asphalt.
That's not part of that project. That's part of the remodel project of the Edgewater, and we can check into that.
I wonder if my colleagues are so desirous, maybe the staff could look into that and see. It's been there for probably a month or so.
Okay. That would be great. All right. We get to our public hearing agenda. The first item tonight is at 1604 Price Street. Caltrans is the applicant, and this is a continued public hearing for consideration of a coastal development permit for installation of approximately 0.7 miles of metal beam rail with metal posts along the southbound Highway 101 shoulder between the Shell Beach Road off-ramp and the Avila Drive off-ramp. And its existing paved shoulder will also be widened to 10 feet in this area as well. And Scott Graham, want to give us a little more, bring us up to date on this project?
Well, as the commission is aware, this item was continued from both the September 27th meeting and October 11th meeting with directions to staff to work with Caltrans and have representatives from Caltrans present at the meeting to answer questions that were raised at the meeting of September 27th. I believe we do have representatives from Caltrans in the audience that are prepared to answer questions from the Planning Commission.
Great.
Staff's, we did revise, you have the staff report in your packet from the original Planning Commission meeting. The resolution's been revised to reflect the dates today, and recommendation from staff is still for approval of the proposed metal beam guardrail.
Okay. I think the main concern was looking at our general plan and the view corridor in that particular area. Does anybody have any comments before we could actually bring the representative from Caltrans up and have him answer any questions that you might have?
Well, I have some things that I would like them to answer.
Okay.
I don't know if you want me to address them again.
Well, first I was asking, does anybody have any questions of staff first before we bring them up?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
If the representative from Caltrans would like to come up, we can ask you some questions. Appreciate you being here tonight. Ted, you seem to have some questions. You want to go first?
Okay.
And the representative is?
Let me introduce myself.
Thank you.
I'm Amy Donatello. I'm the project manager for one of the projects that is on your agenda item, the climbing lane. We're
okay.
building a climbing lane. We're going to widen to the median, and it starts at San Luis Obispo Creek Bridge, and then it goes to Spyglass off-ramp, and it'll be one lane widened to the median, so we'll have three lanes. It's a truck climbing lane is what it is.
Would that be similar to the exit off of Price Street up over to Five Cities Drive?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Well, yes, but it's more of a, it's not an auxiliary, that's an auxiliary lane where it takes traffic from one off-ramp and to an on, from an on-ramp to an off-ramp. It connects two ramps together. This is for, it's a more of a truck climbing lane, like up a Cuesta Grade where slower moving vehicles can stay to the right.
Thank you.
And we'll still have two lanes of traffic going through.
Is that climbing lane going to be on the right-hand side of the road, or is it going to be, are you going
we're
gonna to
widen
put something?
To the median.
To the center.
Yeah, it's not, the okay. highway's not going to be closer to the...
Okay, then my questions that I have for you are still valid, okay?
And then the other project is just a guardrail project where we're putting the guardrail in and we're widening the existing 8-foot shoulder to 10 feet, so we'd be adding like 2 feet of pavement on the shoulder. And that project is a safety project. That project has the same guardrail in it that my larger project does for a backup. If something happens and my project doesn't go, the smaller project will handle the guardrail.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate to discuss this truck climbing lane since it's not an agendized item tonight?
Well, I think it is part of the...
It'll actually be coming before the Planning Commission at a later date. It's just she was referencing that it could be part of a larger project, but it is two things they're looking at doing in the city at this point.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And if they had come before us with this other item, and Randy had wanted you to hear that it could be part of a larger project, but they'd maybe broken it out to have it done earlier, potentially as a separate project for safety reasons, because we have had cars leave the highway over there.
So we're not taking any action on the second project.
It'll be coming back before you with a coastal development permit at a later date.
Okay. Well, I think we'll probably just stick with the guardrail discussion. I think that's what's before us tonight.
Okay. And my questions, since I'm going to start off, Mr. Chairman, my questions are regarding the view over the top of the guardrail. And one of the things that our general plan requires is that there be no reduction of blue water view on that road. And this clearly does, and it's been mitigated or stated by Caltrans, I guess consultants and or other people that that's of no significance because of the fact that as you drive by, you'll be going at 50 miles an hour and there's only basically 2 seconds to take a look at it. I find that not in Congress with our general plan that says absolutely you will not reduce that view. And I have a couple items. I don't know if you've taken a look at the packet or not, but in there's Exhibit 1. And I wonder, there are other means that I'm knowledgeable about that, and I'm sure your engineers are, and probably you are, that probably one of the safest ways to protect cars from going anyplace or protect the people inside the cars is a chain link fence. And the freeways in Los Angeles use chain link fence for many, many years, the problem being that it was too costly to replace the fence all the time because once the car went into it, it pulled part of the fence together and surrounded the car and kept it from going into the other lane or going off the road. And that made a significant cost to the state to replace that. So they did away with it and came up with a guardrail to bounce the car back into the lane. I'm concerned that there are other methods, and your environmental impact report did not consider additional alternatives, and that is a significant alternative that could be investigated, and you make no mention of that whatsoever.
I did bring a traffic safety representative, and maybe she can help us answer that question about the fence.
Good evening. I'm Deb Larson. I'm with Traffic Safety out of San Luis Obispo. Guardrail would be the minimum standard that's acceptable today per the federal requirements. There's been crash testing various vehicles. Guardrail level test 3 would be the minimum standard we'd have out there. Other alternatives would be something like a tri-beam barrier that would be heavier, concrete guardrail, which would be taller. So the metal beam guardrail, as you know, it's about 28 inches in height, slightly lower, and the rail itself is about 12 inches in height, is probably the easiest view to obtain. We do have landscape architect in the office, in the audience as well, and if you had specific visual questions, I believe he'd be able to answer them this evening.
Well, we do have your pictures that you took of the view, and it does basically reduce the view of the of Blue Water as you come on that road. And we have, okay, I personally can't vote for this because the general plan that we have in this city will not allow it. And I'm looking for another solution. I want to save lives, and I don't want.
I have a question.
Going
for
the house.
You're a safety. You're involved in safety.
Yes, I am.
Well, I would think that in regards to safety, what would be the resulting issues if we didn't put a guardrail there, as far as safety for the people going by there?
In public. Over the 3 years that we looked at the collision data when this project was initiated from 2001 to 2004, we had 6 over-the-embankment collisions, 1 hitting structure, 1 overturning, 1 ending up on Shell Beach Road. Vehicles are going over the side of the embankment through a good portion of it. It meets the height slope criteria for guardrail, and then there's the trees and the structures just beyond.
Do you feel that you may not be privy to all the details of those accidents, but would a guardrail, would that have assisted in those accidents of not occurring?
It would definitely have assisted in
at least going over.
Exactly. Kept the vehicles up on the roadway rather than up down the embankment.
Well, from my standpoint, that gives me.
Would it stop an 18-wheel truck that was going 55 miles an hour over the top of it?
There's different crash tests for different levels. To stop an 18-wheeler, you probably would have to have concrete guardrail.
I would think to stop an 18-foot-wheeler truck, you would result in a barrier that had significantly greater visual impact than a 28-inch tall metal guardrail.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, what type of structure would you build to stop that?
Okay, so I'm not finished, okay. If I may, please. If it will not stop an 18-wheel truck going over there at 55 miles an hour, I guess is the speed limit for trucks, and you're going to put in a make that right-hand lane a truck lane, really, because is what you're doing is slow traffic will go on there, and it will be a truck lane going up the hill. Why is it necessary to put this guardrail in?
The vehicles that have gone over the embankment, none of them have been semis. They've all been vehicles, trucks, pickup trucks.
Down the road, you're planning on putting a truck lane in there for slow traffic moving up that hill.
Those trucks are existing there now. The truck climbing lane would provide additional maneuver room. that additional vehicles would be able to take the inside two lanes and trucks would be on the outside lane.
Okay, I have a few more things that I want to ask you. In your NES report, natural environment, minimal impacts, you say that this particular area is residential. It is not residential. It's OS1, which is open space with one resident on in this particular case, about 2.5 acres. So it's not standard residential property, but it's open space residential with one 5,000 square foot structure to be built on that property. In your draft exemption categorical extension program, in there, the CEQA compliance, you talk in terms of this project does not damage a scenic resource, and it has the caveat within an officially designated state scenic highway. And I propose to you that this really should be adopted as a state scenic highway on the basis that this particular view is only experienced going over San Francisco Bay, and then you never see that ocean again on Highway 101 until such time as you see that view there, and you do not see it again until you get to Gaviota. So I propose to you that this is and should be a scenic highway spot right there. So I kind of find this thing, although it's a draft, not to be in congruence with the truth.
But it's not a scenic highway.
No, it's not. Hasn't been designated as yet. And I ask you, would a 24-inch height reduced another 4 inches that would allow that view to still remain the same, offer the same sort of protection as a 28-inch thigh rail?
No, it would not.
Okay, those are the only questions I have.
Okay. Mr. Burns, you have some questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A quick comment, with all respect for Commissioner Ehring. I think that it's not the intent of the general plan to sacrifice safety over a view. And the view is, of course, quite important to us, but obviously so is life and limb. So it would seem to me that if that the guardrail or a concrete barrier, if a car hits it, it would tend to skid along the side of it, whereas if we did put up the chicken wire fence, would that not tend to grab the car and spin it back out into the lanes?
We wouldn't put chain link fence in that area, not on the outside of a curve, not with the volumes, not with the over-embankment collisions that we're seeing there.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Bradford, do you have some questions?
I actually have a question of staff that I didn't think to ask earlier. I noticed that there is a chain link fence along a portion of the road there when I was driving up. It sits lower.
At Shell Beach Road.
Yeah. Is that a private fence through there?
It's in the Caltrans right-of-way, I believe.
Okay.
That would be the right-of-way fence.
Okay. And that's a chain link fence in the Caltrans right away.
Correct.
I appreciate the fact that you brought three people tonight, each to address a different issue. I think it shows a great commitment in the Caltrans interest in the community, and I'm very impressed by that. Doesn't mean that I can change my support of the project because of what the general plan dictates, but I really do appreciate all of you showing.
Thank you. May I?
Yes, go ahead.
May I introduce myself? I'm Bob Carr. I'm Caltrans. I prepared the visual impact assessment. I'm also the district scenic highway coordinator for the state. And I think maybe a little background before we get too far with the quality of views and the type change and whether your findings, whether it's consistent with the general plan or not, maybe a little discussion of that. And apparently you have the study I prepared, just a two-page visual inventory and the photo simulations show, and I think it's important when looking at those, there's two of them from the southbound direction. And we took the approach, rather than so that we could have all the cards on the table, as the worst case scenario. So how we prepared those is I stood in the median and got down approximately 4.5 feet eye level, and we put some cones to mock up the height of the what the rail would be along the shoulder, and took our photos there. And so what you're seeing there is really, I guess, the person in a sports car in the fast lane, because there's a cross slope of the road there. That is the worst case scenario that which we've described. Just coming here today on my regular sedan in the slow lane, views would not have been affected whatsoever. But I think it's reasonable, and particularly California environmental law requires that we disclose the worst possible case. So that's what you're seeing in the simulations. And what it does say is there's approximately, depending on the speed you travel, it slows down a little bit, of course, as we know, going over the top there, maybe, you know, 40, 45 seconds worth of ocean view through that section where you can first see it coming over the top of the grade till the landscaping obscures it down near the ramps. And what we found driving is you have for about 100 feet of that, which equates to about a second at 50 miles an hour, you lose 80 to 100% of the view if you're in a Miata in the fast lane. And for the next 200 feet, you lose approximately 50% of it. So that's 3 seconds out of the total 45 seconds. That's less than a half of a percentage of the view that is available. So, and finding whether it's consistent with the general plan or not, and we didn't want to just leave it at that. We did identify some view blockage. So what we tried to look for was how can we minimize the views, and then how can we come up with a no net loss view type of approach. So the way we approach that is so the barrier itself is lower. Now keep in mind, it's 27 inches high is actually the height of the metal beam guardrail. The barrier, the metal rail itself, is 12 inches high. So it's a 12-inch swath cutting through horizontally. The posts we're going to use are they're metal posts. You may have seen them in other little installations around. Those have a smaller cross section than the wood posts do that we're probably most familiar with. So that's a, you know, it's an incremental thing. That's a little bit better. And then also what we've tried to do, I think most importantly, is we took a look at the signage along that section of road. We have two emergency parking only signs, one Pismo Beach city limits sign, one adopt a highway sign, one call box, and one that says Shell Beach Spyglass Road approaching. What we've done is eliminated a couple of those signs. We're proposing to move the call box down. We worked with SLOCOG, the call box program, found an alternative location that still meets the requirement, just a little bit to the south that's shielded by the existing trees there in the, you know, in the city. And we're going to move that adopt a highway sign down. We're looking at whether we need to leave the emergency, no emergency parking or emergency parking only signs up for obvious reasons, but we're willing to take another look at one of those. Maybe one could be relocated. So what we're hoping is between those things and just the brief second of view that it really is not a significant change and that it could be considered no net loss of view coming over the top.
Okay.
That enabled me to come up with the findings of no significance and be consistent with CEQA.
Okay, thank you. Did you have some questions before we go to the public?
I don't have any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. We might have you come back if we have any further questions. We'll go ahead and open it to the public now. If anyone from the public likes to speak on this item, you have 3 minutes to speak. Anyone? Yes.
Hi, my name is Ron Eichworth. I live along Shell Beach Road, 107 Beachcomber. I spoke to you guys last time. I think you guys need to support this. This is a huge safety issue, and I actually brought a couple of photos showing one of the structures. I'd like to pass that around.
Sure.
Looking at it from Shell Beach Road. And if you notice, the top of this building is right at the level of the freeway. Like you guys say, if a car goes off that road, there's parks down there. You guys have allowed a basketball court, multiple tennis courts. Kids play there all the time. It's a huge safety issue. I think Caltrans has done a great job. I mean, they brought representation. They've gone out of their way. You guys are imposing all these restrictions, requirements on them. And if they end up walking away from this, we're going to have this large safety issue that
you know, potentially someone's going to get killed, potentially kids are going to get killed. And it's a minor one-second view. People should not even be looking at the view as they go around that corner anyway. So I think you guys need to support this. I think they've done a great job with, you know, their engineering and effort they've put into this. So I'd like to see you guys support it.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Okay, we'll close it to the public. Come forward. I'm sorry, you did give me a card.
Yeah, sorry. John Steinbeck at 356 Miramar. I just wanted to voice my opinion on the guardrail. I think it's anything in violation. It seems like it's clearly in violation of the general plan, and that some other solution could be come up with, could be arrived at, and a guardrail of that type, I'm not supportive, and I think you guys should come up with something else. The barrier fence would that's already existing, it seems like that's going to catch any cars that would come off. So anyway, I hope you'd support the general plan and not support the guardrail.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close it to the public. Yes?
How about the legal responsibility to put that rail up? You know, it's something that we would have to do, and there is no other alternative to the rail. There's nothing. There's no chain link fence. There's just the rail, and the alternative would be a wooden post, and we're putting a smaller post up. So it's our obligation to handle the safety issues and protect the public.
Okay, thank you. We'll bring it back to the commission. I'll start. I just feel like that when I started 6 years ago with the Planning Commission and I had my interview with the council, I said that I would uphold the general plan, that I would use the zoning rules and ordinances to guide me along, but I would never throw out common sense. And they appointed me, and I've been reappointed each time, and I still feel that that's important, and I think that's why we're up here, because we are in to interpret the general plan and to interpret how it's carried out. And unless Caltrans or anyone opposed to this fence can figure out an invisible fence that would stop cars from going, I don't think there's any alternative from what we have. I personally don't think that, aside from the safety issue, which would frankly be enough for me to go ahead and vote for this, to vote for approval, that would be enough on itself. But I don't feel that the view corridor is obstructed to the degree of what the general plan is referring to. I think that Caltrans, and I do appreciate them coming out, only one representative at three, and showing their respect for our community to come and talk about this. But I think I've been convinced that this is not going to have a substantial hindrance on our view corridor. If anything, it'll be for a matter of a few seconds. And I'm willing to trade that for the lives of our passengers that are going to be coming into Pismo Beach.
I'd like to follow up on that. I'd have to agree with John Sargon Fry's statements. I, too, think that the project is reasonable. I think Caltrans staff has done a great job of presenting it. I think that a 28-inch metal guardrail is the appropriate alternative. I don't think it would result in a significant visual impact. I think there's more than enough evidence to support a finding that it's a less than significant impact to visual resources. And if there is a minor inconsistency with the general plan, I think as the Planning Commission, we can make the finding to support this project on the notion that
it's a public building, it's a public entity, where there is no feasible alternative and all appropriate mitigation measures are applied to minimize adverse visual impacts. I don't see in the report that any alternative was considered, and that's the difficulty I have in making a finding in favor of the project.
But I think that the Caltrans representatives have stated to us that they don't feel, with safety as the paramount concern, that there is an alternative. The safety and structure case, or what's your title?
I'm a transportation engineer, but I work in traffic safety.
And your expert opinion is that there is no other mitigation possible other that would be as limited from a, I guess basically we've got two things here. One is the structure itself and limiting the view. Is, in your learned opinion, is there anything else that you feel that would be that would give us more view and increase safety or ultimate safety with the guardrail?
No, there is not.
Mr. Chairman, while she's there, is 28 inches the minimum height you feel necessary to provide the safety factor?
Given the research, the testing, it's various vehicles, various speeds, various center of gravity, the metal beam guardrail is the minimum we can put out there. The actual construction height is 27 3/4 plus or minus a half inch. So we're calling it 28 inches.
Thank you.
Have you considered at all reducing the speed as you come up that hill with a turn, with a blind turn? In other words, maybe it should be a 50 mile an hour instead of 65 and people driving 70. Have you considered that at all as an alternative?
No, sir. That would not... I doubt if we'd have CHP support to reduce it down to 50 miles per hour. It wouldn't be enforceable. People would continue to drive at the higher speeds if they felt it was safe to do so.
There's nothing. There's no notification as you come up that turn that tells anyone that you're going to turn. There's no little thing or a squiggly line like you all do when you go up a mountain road or something like that. And there's nothing that says in preparation to reduce speed or anything of that nature whatsoever. And
if you're driving at 65, you don't have to reduce the speed. And if you're trucking, you're driving at 55, you don't have to reduce the speed.
And I guess I propose that Caltrans has not investigated all alternatives in this case.
I think you brought up a good point, though, of why people why there's accidents there.
That's
because
right.
This is the first time that
they don't notify
us. No. This is the first time they can see the ocean since they've been in the Bay Area. So what they're doing is, it's not whether how fast they're going, they're looking at the view and not looking at the road.
Exactly.
So we need a guardrail there to help them if they're going to go off the road to stop them.
Protect them from
bay. So I just want to, just to clarify, the reason that there are no other solutions to this or other alternatives is because there are none. Is that correct?
This is the minimal that we can do out there. Again, if we were to put something like a tri-beam barrier or a concrete guardrail, it would be larger than the metal beam guardrail.
And you would not recommend putting a chain link fence?
No. That would not stop the vehicles from going down the embankment. We use it as a right-of-way fence, but not to stop vehicles from going over the embankment.
Okay, thank you.
And steel cabling is not an alternative.
No.
Okay. Ted, did you want to?
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I give my opinion on this, I would like to make a statement about Caltrans in general. Prior meetings, I've had some rather strong words towards Caltrans for hours of operations, etc. Yesterday, by happenstance, I run into one of the supervising engineers, I don't know if I got the right title, that runs these road crews at night. And we had a bit of a talk about this, and I was straightened out as to the safety factor, which is why I'm going to support this project with you, regarding why they do these projects in the middle of the night. So I'll stand down from those prior statements for the moment. I've been invited to a site visit at night, and I'm sure it will be an education. I'll report back to the Planning Commission what it's like standing on the freeway in the middle of the night. As in regard to this project, I couldn't state it any better than Commissioner Vardis and Chairman Sorgenfrey, so I'll just say that I agree with the two of you and I support this project.
Okay. Any further discussion? Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve Resolution 05-0168 as conditioned.
Okay. I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Did you get who said no and who said yes? Okay.
Over a period of 100 years for the site. That report was provided by Geo Solutions. The report came back with a 2.9-inch erosion rate per year over a 100-year period. That equates to a 24-foot setback from the bluff top. incorporating a 10-foot buffer for safety reasons or as a safety factor. The total blufftop setback is now 34 feet, as indicated on the plans. Staff had the GeoSolutions report peer-reviewed by Earth Systems, who, after a little bit of back and forth with GeoSolutions, agreed with a 2.9 inch per year erosion rate as appropriate for the site and correct. And with that, the rest of the project remains consistent with both the 1983 zoning code requirements and the 1993 general plan. And staff is recommending approval of the project as conditioned. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any of the commissioners have any questions of staff?
I have one.
Okay.
This has to do with the chart on page 5.
Okay.
Okay, on that chart, it says minimum front yard setback should be 17.8 feet, and the proposed is 15, and it says it complies. Yes? Something's wrong there.
It's the minimum setback requirement for blufftop lots is actually 15 feet 20 to a garage.
Okay, so that we should
change
it.
That portion of it. I'll make a note and correct it in the staff report.
Okay.
So that is compliant. There's not a variance.
No, it's compliant.
And the reason I ask is that I did get a call from one neighbor today who basically liked the idea of the house, just was concerned were there any variances, and I said not to my knowledge. So we're good to go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Let's see, I have one other question.
Okay.
And I noticed, I'm concerned about drainage on the bluff, okay? And on this particular lot, there was, a 4 or 6 inch line that just goes and sticks out horizontally at the edge of the bluff.
Yes.
And I didn't understand that they're going to take that out. One of the things that was recommended by the GeoSolutions was that they either hook it up and put it all down to the bedrock,
mm-hmm.
or I think the city asks for pumping back up to the street and putting drainage and going down the storage drains to collective areas.
Yeah. One of the things we look at, and we're not sure what the status of the existing drainage facilities is on site. You know, are they adequate? Are they not adequate at this point? The plan didn't establish that, so that needs to be taken a look at when they come in for their construction documents, at which point we'll probably take a look at determining whether, if it's not adequate, they'll be pumping it back to the street. The sort of irony of this is I think it only pumps it back up to the street to go back out another outfall that's only one or two lots away. so if they can utilize the existing drainage structure from the site, we'll probably allow them to do so. The question is, we don't know what the status of that is, meaning is it in good working order or not, and they're going to need to establish that when they come in for with their construction documents to the building department for a permit.
But as you know, I don't like horizontal pipes just sticking out and letting the water drop down and then be blown back into the face. It has to be and go down to the bedrock.
If the commission would concur, we can alter one of the conditions to if the pipe is to stay to be utilized as a drainage facility, that they do take it down to the bedrock. We can do that.
Okay.
But also, I think we do have a condition here that said they need to follow the requirements of their geology
report.
Yeah,
the geological report does suggest that.
So, I mean, that would be consistent with that condition. Although I can put the language specifically in there if desired.
Can you describe that in more detail? What exactly the pipe would be?
As Commissioner Ehring stated, the pipe kind of comes out straight from the bluff, maybe, I don't know, a couple of foot down from the top of the bluff, and the water drains out there and is blown back into the bluff, and it increases erosion and things like that, and the recommendation is not to do that and to bring it down to the bedrock so the water is put out at the bottom of the bluff instead of at the face where wind can affect it and blow it back into the bluff, which increases the erosion rate at the top of the bluff.
Seems to make sense.
Yeah, so that's what we're looking at.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions before we go to the public? Anyone from the public like to speak on this item? Come forward.
Commissioners, my name is Tom Brakovich. I'm the architect for the project and representative of Mr. and Mrs. Saldo, the owners. We came a couple weeks ago and it got continued, but we had some pretty favorable response from one of the persons. I'd just like to go over a couple things and then ask if you would have any questions. So number one, we're doing replacement housing, and number two, this was approved by the Architectural Control Committee. We've met all the height limits and the setbacks to the ordinances. It's better to have planting in the bluff so that it holds the bank. And as far as your issue about the pipe and the drainage sticking out, we'll resolve that in the working drawing stage in the civil engineering, and we're going to improve that, clean it out, and drain it in a non-erosive manner so it goes more down into solid rock, which is very, those pipes are very common. I noticed in other projects I've done at Pismo, they just kind of stuck pipes out.
Yeah, I think you'd be doing your client a favor by doing that. I think
yes.
Commissioner Aaron's got a good point. It tends
I understand
right
this point at all. I've seen lots of them in Pismo. One of my questions, though, is about if I could get someone to clarify the lateral access agreement and the purpose of it. So maybe someone could clarify it. We agree with it, but
it's a general plan requirement, and it extends from the I think the oceanside edge of the parcel up at the top of the bluff, and provides lateral access across the front edge of the property.
But no one will actually. The owner is concerned about somebody climbing up there, and you know,
if they have ladders or something hanging off, I guess would it be possible?
Yeah, I know it's pretty steep, but I don't think
it provides the access from one side of the lot to the other side on the beach side of it. Assuming that at some time there is beach there, there may not ever be. Maybe it's just rock, but it does provide for that access, and that's the intent behind the general plan policy where this is derived from.
Okay. Well, anyway, it sounds like that it probably wouldn't affect.
No, I don't think in this case it won't affect it. But I realize the purpose of it probably is if there's a beach below so the public can access the sand and walk across the property. Anyway, that's my presentation, and if there's any questions, I can answer them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone have any questions of the architect? No?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else from the public like to speak on this item?
Good evening, John Stocksdale, Shoreline Drive. First of all, I'd like to compliment the applicant for taking the time on several occasions to meet with the neighbors. If you looked at the drawing that's on the board, you'll see a tree in the drawing that is larger than the existing house and larger than the proposed house. And the applicant met early on with the neighbors and agreed to remove that tree. Goes back to some of the view corridors you were talking about earlier. You also heard from the architect that they're going to make sure there's the view corridor. For example, on the south side of the house right now, there is a tree that's blocking some of the view corridor, and the applicant has agreed to remove that. So I want to compliment the applicant for meeting with the staff and helping the neighbors.
Great.
And we approve the project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak on this project? Okay. Any of the commissioners have any comments or any further questions before we have a motion?
A comment, Mr. Commissioner. I remember at the last meeting we had a very long item in front of theirs, and Marilee Hyman came up and spoke in favor of the project and how well the applicant has worked with the neighbors, and I thought it was a bit ironic. And I think it's just a compliment to the Sardos how they've included their neighbors, and this is... I would encourage others to do the same when these type of instances come up. It's a very nice house, Mr. Sardo, and I'm certainly in support of it, and I'm sure that you'll enjoy it for many years.
Yeah, I would echo that. I commend you for talking with your neighbors, and it makes things go a lot smoother when it gets up to here if all that's been done beforehand. So, good job. Okay.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
Okay, I make a motion that we adopt resolution number 040165, approving the project subject to the attached conditions.
Okay.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Can I have it?
Okay. Next item tonight is 110 Oak Park Road. And this is project number 030071, 030072, and 030073, and 005391018. All those, huh? Okay. And tonight, this is an amendment to the Tucon Terrace specific plan to allow approximately 5.21 acres of site to be changed from commercial use to residential. And Scott, you are recommending that this item be continued. Is that correct?
That's correct. Due to an issue related to the timing and status of the environmental document, staff report preparation time, we weren't sure if it was done with it was gone through the clearinghouse and the date it ended for that document to be and for the city to receive comments back from them. Subsequently, found out that it had ended, but we didn't have that final confirmation at the time, and so we didn't have a staff report prepared, and the environmental document wasn't completed. So the plan
approximately August of 2002. We look forward to working with the city and getting some resolution to the changes which we are requesting. The time for reviewing the mitigated negative declaration ended on October 7th, and to our knowledge, there was only one comment made in a timely manner. That was by the Air Pollution Control District. The issues that they raised are issues that don't cause any concern and won't have any great impact on the property. We do look forward to your view and consideration of this as early as possible. It has been a long time. We've gone through, in fact, we've even had to do two traffic studies due to the length of time that it's taken to process this project.
Well, I think what we can do is that we can recommend to staff that we hear it at the next meeting. And that what we're lacking is the staff report. And I think if we, I know it's another delay, but it's a fairly short one. And at that point, then we would have everything before us. And what we can do, though, is to make sure that we have it at the next meeting, which is 2 weeks from now.
We do understand and appreciate that. Unfortunately for me, the 8th is not a good date, so if we could move it one beyond that
okay.
would be appreciated.
Would that be possible?
We have a very full agenda on that 22nd. You know what? I can move one of my items around.
Well, I'd like to accommodate the applicant.
Yeah,
so if we have a longer night.
I'll move one of my items around to take advantage of that. That's fine.
So we can do
really
that.
Appreciate it.
And that would be for November 8th meeting. Is that correct?
I'm
sorry. No,
22nd.
Excuse me.
Okay. One other comment. I did hear some mention of a portion of this project being considered in conjunction with some other project. Insofar as the commission may have taken any action, the owner is not aware of that. The owner was not provided with any opportunity to participate in that, and I really don't know what action may have been taken or consideration of any use of the property, but obviously we can deal with that between this time and...
I think it was more of a reference item, really. I don't think it impacts the applicant's in their situation with what they want to do, does it?
You know, it had to do with a small piece of open space property located between the Dunn property and the Baker property. The open space designation crosses property lines in that location, meaning it doesn't match up specifically with the individual property owner's property lines there. And when we went through made the change to the Dunn property, it picked up a piece of the open space land use designation, which is consistent with the application that Baker has before the city now. So it picked up a small piece of that and made it consistent with the request that they're making on top of it, and you'll actually see that with the exhibits that come forward later.
The only thing that I would ask is if there is any information that the applicant would need as it relates to that, we have some time till the 22nd. We provide that for you.
Very good.
I will absolutely do that.
Okay. That'd be great.
Okay. Thanks.
Appreciate
again.
Your patience, and we'll hear it at that time.
Very good.
I'm assuming, because you guys need to vote whether we're going to continue this or not.
I move that we continue this to the November 22nd.
There may be other folks that wish to speak on the item.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Getting ahead of ourselves. Studer, I am a homeowner for Tucon Terrace Home Association, and I may be out of line on this one. 2-3 years ago when this project started, there was a concern about them wanting access through the Tucon Terrace Home Association driveways. And... I'm here to support the board and the homeowners there that we still decline any kind of access through there as far as public automobile access through the Tucon Terrace private streets.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's being brought up at this time or not, but if there's any questions, we'd love to be kept informed of any kind of application to that.
You'll receive notice of the meeting again, and you're free to come into the office at any time and look at the plans, but it does not provide for access through to the Tucon Terrace subdivision.
At this time, they're not applying for any kind of access?
No. The
the subsequent development application does not include that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
I'm Laura Beltran. I'm a member of the Toucan Terrace, and I just am wanting to watch this project. I'm concerned about the residential development over there in the open, and changing it from commercial to residential. And so I just received a card in the mail the other day about attending this meeting, and so I am concerned, and I just want to make sure that I follow up and that we're all informed about, you know, with the card again, about future meetings.
Well, I would put it on your calendar that it's going to be on the 22nd.
Thank
and you.
You
should receive a notice as well if you're within that area.
We'll renotice the meeting.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
You should mention that we received a piece of correspondence from Garth Bullock, the resident that also lives there.
Yeah.
All right, our next item is at 147 Stimson, and this is a public hearing for a coastal development and conditional use permit for demolition of a portion of the existing Clam Digger former motel site and construction of a three-level, 67-room oceanfront hotel with subterranean parking and pool facilities and related improvements. There's two variances are requested, a variance from the 5-foot side yard setback, and at the rear of the property, a zero setback is requested, and a variance for the required 10-foot rear yard setback for a portion of the structure. A zero setback is requested. An environmental determination shall also be made, and an initial study for mitigated negative declaration will be considered. The site is an oceanfront lot adjacent to Stimson Street, located in the central commercial district of the downtown core planning area. And Carolyn, are you going to give us
a background
on this?
As you just went through the project description, I won't go through that again, but the project before you, the elevation that is right here, to the left you see where the existing Clam Digger site is. This also is part of the Clam Digger site as we know it today in this form with the small cottages, but this is what is being proposed. Boardwalk in the front, 67-room hotel, underground parking. It's fairly well outlined on page 46 of your staff report. The existing cottages and the metal building there would be demolished. There'd be an 81-space parking facility in a basement level, and in all there'd be 67 rooms. The project was considered went through the CEQA process and the initial studies in your staff report. All the mitigations that were identified are also part of the project conditions of approval. Unless you have questions about those specifically, I'm not going to go through them right now, but
okay.
Can come back later with responses. There are a few conditions related to the design of the building that are being proposed. One would require review of the courtyard area prior to the issuance of the building permit. There could be some modifications to that after the community development director has a chance to review it further. We think that we might be able to add a little bit to that. Additionally, we were looking at this is a very wonderful location for a piece of public art, which is not something we've seen in any of the larger projects that have come through the city of late. We feel like it would really add a pedestrian appeal as you go down the boardwalk. So that's something that this project would introduce. Additionally, there are a few other issues. One is a general plan policy that talks about the demolition of the smaller cottages that are currently being used for some folks as permanent housing. And the commission really does need to discuss general plan policy that talks about replacement of affordable housing in this area. Not all the occupants that live in the existing units meet the low to moderate income qualifications. However, the rents are low enough that they could be rented in that way. And one thing that's interesting about the general plan is that while it requires you to create replacement housing, it also says that there are exceptions to that rule. And one is the demolition less than, I believe it's three dwelling units, less than three dwelling units, or the conversion of 10 or fewer. Well, that really doesn't apply in this case. But the other is whether or not the conversion would happen for the purposes of a coastal dependent or a coastal related use. Now, what's being proposed here is an oceanfront hotel. You can build a hotel anywhere, but you can only build an oceanfront hotel on the ocean. So it's staff's opinion that it does meet this standard, that it is it's a coastal dependent use because it's an oceanfronting hotel. The policy also talks about relocation costs for existing tenants and how those need to be handled, and a plan would need to be put in place prior to the issuance of a building permit for folks to be relocated and the applicant to bear the cost of that relocation. So those are the primary general plan policies that this talks about. The last one, though, is kind of interesting. As you look at the boardwalk here, and then you look at the figure, but we are recommending that that little piece between the promenade and the hotel itself on the sand, there be an offer to dedicate. Additionally, the general plan talks about having some interpretive signage, and that's something else that we're recommending as a condition of the project approval. With that, this is how the project is addressing all the general plan requirements.
Would you? There's a couple of variances. You want to give us a little brief?
Yeah, I was going to go into the zoning now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were
okay.
Finished.
That's okay. I wanted to call your attention to an addendum that you received, I hope, dated October 24th, and it was addendum to your packet. And I'll get to that in a few minutes, but I do want to make sure you all have it. The project, as it's proposed, it meets all the zoning code requirements with the exception of building height at one elevation, which we've recommended a condition that be lowered. And that could happen prior to now and the time the building permit application comes in. And the second is the variance application. The last item before I go into the variance discussion is the parking issue. And I had indicated in the original report that this was short a few spaces, but I did not take into account the zoning code allowance for mixed-use parking and a reduction in parking for mixed uses. And in this addendum, the second page, it includes a finding, second and third page, it includes a finding that identifies, it's page 5 of 23 of the addendum, identifies that the parking demands of the hotel and the meeting room together would really qualify for a reduced level of parking. And as such, the project meets the parking requirements. The last piece of the zoning discussion is related to the variance, and the variance applications are for a zero setback at the side yard here and a zero setback in the rear. You can't really see it from here, but this property is very interesting in that it's located right next to a commercial piece of property towards the pier. The other side of the clam digger is zoned commercial, and that setback requirement in the commercial zoning district is zero. You can go right to property line for anything in the commercial district. Just one lot next to it is a hotel district where the setback on the side yard is 5 feet and in the rear yard is 10. And we found in looking at this that the surroundings of this site really push it into the qualification for a variance. No, they don't have a steep lot. No, they don't have a pie-shaped lot. But the fact that it's surrounded by property that does have a zero setback was important in that if the setback, especially in the side yard, would be honored the way it is, you could end up with kind of a 5-foot no man's land once this property develops someday, because this property can go right to the setback. Right to the property line. So we felt like that was a fairly strong case for discussion on the variance. I think that it's outlined further at the end of the report, and if you have any questions about it in a little bit, I'd be happy to answer them. The last interesting thing about this project is that there's some height limitations in the zoning code for oceanfront property that require a 25-foot height limit, and this property is 35 feet to its highest point. However, in looking at the facades on this, you see that they step this back at each level to give an appearance of that 25 feet. In discussing this some time ago with the Coastal Commission staff, and after they looked at all the surrounding hotel properties, they advised that they felt the spirit of this requirement was met, and the applicant went forward with that information. So unless you have any questions, I'm available at your pleasure, and the applicant does have a presentation.
Okay. Any of the commissioners have any questions of staff before we hear from the applicant?
I do. Sorry.
I'll go ahead.
Just a couple of quick questions, Carolyn.
Uh-huh.
First off, the zoning, and I think that's it's a real far-sighted and a good idea not to have a little 5-foot alleyway off the beach there that could provide all kinds of problems. Under the 98 code, hypothetically, if the 98 code were implemented, these would be both in the same zone, wouldn't they?
You know, I'd have to look.
It's for demolition that have been rented at rates affordable to low and moderate income households at any time 1 year, prior to the application for
it's
demolition.
It's on page 50 of 63.
So it's a year and a day then.
It's the first one.
And that's prior to application for planning or application for a building permit?
For demolition.
For demolition.
The application for demolition.
Okay. You've answered my questions. Thank you.
I can answer your zoning question. In the 98 zoning ordinance, both properties would be zoned downtown commercial.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
Questions?
Okay. Yeah, I have some things here. On page 3, 8 and 9, condition or findings. 8 and 9 are the same findings as 13 and 14, and I would recommend that they be stricken, 13 and 14.
Thank you.
I have something that I would like to see added to this. I think this is a beautiful project. I'm very happy to see this happen. But one of the things that I'm a little bit concerned about, and I think it's in the addendum, and I don't have a page number, but it really discusses landscape and courtyards. Mm-hmm. I think in our general plan, and as well, it says the community development director, prior to issuance of building permit, yes, will review this landscaping, which I assume includes the patio.
Yes.
And I would like to see in there an item C. And since these things that are on the boardwalk are supposed to be pedestrian friendly, I would like to see that put in as item C. There's a tendency for these that are on the promenade to actually exclude people that are kind of walking along there, and kind of fence it in. And I would like to see something put in there that the courtyard will be pedestrian friendly, inviting the public to participate in that. And that'd be what I'd like to see added in there. That would kind of guarantee that they would kind of open this patio up rather than closing it in and locking gates and not letting people into the patio.
Kind of sounds like what you're saying is you don't want a gate there at any time.
I'm suggesting that, but I'm at least I'm leaving it open and let the community development director work with the situation.
Or perhaps Vice Chairman Ehring, a gate that will remain open certain hours and maybe late at night the gate can be locked and reopened early in the morning.
I'll leave that up to the community development director to, because that's what this really says, and I'd just like to add a C to it.
And I would concur with that.
Maybe if you get to a place where you're making a motion, we'll try to frame that for you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I'm a little bit concerned in your addendum, and I'm interested in you explaining this to me, because I would like to see as big a conference center as possible. Okay,
yes.
So I don't want to reduce it down to that. So I'm interested in your parking solution, and I think it was a very good one that they would have valet parking. And,
that was their idea,
and,
yeah.
In tandem parking.
Sure.
Which I think is a great thing. And I certainly would encourage them to increase the size of the square footage of any kind of conferences that rooms that they might have in this kind of thing. That's something that we need down in that area. And we need to see to it that the parking is taken care of in some manner, I think. Okay, and that's all I have, all the questions I have for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Vargas, do you have any questions?
Well, Carolyn, you mentioned the notion of the applicant putting up interpretive displays for signage, and I was just wondering what those displays or signs would convey, what information?
Typically, they're to convey some kind of plant or animal life along, say, a snowy, well, let's not say snowy plover. Let's say
spotted owl.
Something.
Spotted owl.
A seagull or clam.
A red-legged frog.
It's okay to have a clam. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, we've got enough clams. Let's have dolphins.
Well, something that's not endangered. So that's kind of what we were thinking. You might have seen that the interpretive panels that there's a few of them over at Dinosaur Caves Park. Those are real big, and they're in a kiosk. And we weren't thinking of something that large, but the Coastal Conservancy has a lot of samples and good ideas that we could follow up on.
Okay. The second question is the hotel located just south of this proposal.
Mm-hmm. Are counted in the 81
yes.
total.
Yes.
So the additional cars that you're parking in there, how do you, on 21 tandem spaces, why wouldn't it result in 42?
11, the way I count it. 21 of them can have an additional car parked there.
So there's two cars in 21 spaces.
That's 42.
I think the applicant can walk through the
okay.
map. A little easier. Yes, it is.
Okay, any other questions before we hear from the applicants and have their presentation? Okay, why don't we go ahead and hear from you guys?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, it's always fun to come before a strange commission, somebody I've never seen before. I'm a resident of Pismo Beach. My name is Tony Wells. There's three of us, just like Caltrans, speaking tonight. We're all three in partners in the development of this project. We have spent a number of years putting this together, and want to thank Carolyn, Randy, and Judy for all the hard work that they've tolerated and the patience that specifically Carolyn and Randy have given me in trying to make this happen. We actually bought this property in 1998 from Casey Miller just before he died. We bought half interest in it. One of the things that took us so long to develop it is we tried to buy the property next door. Let me see how I get this working. We tried to acquire this site next door, and unfortunately, never quite got around to terms and conditions that would suit her. And so, we finally decided that we would try and put together a piece of property that entailed the apartment house back here. And we tried to talk Carolyn and Randy into letting us develop this and count this as additional parking over here. And they were very stubborn about it because we couldn't figure out a way to get in and out of here. And on your tough weekends, it would probably take around 35 minutes to get around here to park this, in this particular space. So we finally resolved in about a year ago to bring this thing back to just a single piece of property and a hotel and see what we could actually develop on that piece of property. Being on your boardwalk, we wanted to come up with something. Oh, it's not working, guys. It's not advancing. We were afraid we'd have this problem. It works well on our computer. Okay, Joel, go ahead and go to the next one. Can you do it? Nobody can do it. It's frozen up on us. Well, in reality, here we go.
I was just about ready to ask you how you are at Shadow Puppets.
How what? I think the one thing we wanted to address is just exactly what Carolyn talked about, and Vice Chairman over here. We're building a parking garage and we're putting a concrete structure on top, and so we were trying to, in our head, trying to eliminate too much weight. We were thinking of water and grass and things like that. Well, when we talked to our structural engineer not too long ago, he said, go ahead, we'll just go ahead and beef that up. So we will definitely come back to the staff with something that makes more sense, that adds a green space to this, and some kind of an art feature, as well as a common area for people to walk through from the boardwalk down through the hotel and back out. In fact, we'd probably do a little kiosk in here of coffee and that kind of refreshments. Go ahead. Oh, let me address another issue. We met with your fire department, and then the engineer decided they want us to make this a wider cul-de-sac than it is now. Why don't you go to the next one? And one of the problems we had was that the cost of property here, we were going to be losing 4 to 6 more rooms. And so through Carolyn's advice, we came back and we're going to do a little bit of a redesign of our portico share. So when somebody actually enters the hotel, the fire department can actually use this as a greater turnaround area. Although I did meet with the lifeguards out on the beach one day. They drove a fire truck around there for me, and it worked pretty well. Carolyn asked me who he was. I said, I don't know. He's just a great, handsome young man. So I may have been looking at the girls. I'm not sure. Go ahead. Well, it's not sure. This is basically the landscaping plan, and this is what we're going to do a total redesign on. We have not really a swimming pool, but more of a jacuzzi. And the one thing that we do have is that we don't have a gate on this. We have a seawall, and then you walk around the seawall on both sides and come on up into the promenade, up our promenade. Go ahead. This again shows the roof plan and the layout of what's going to be there. Now, one of the things that we decided to take a look at, we've had this thing redesigned, a sandcastle. It's really something that depicts the old waterfront location. So we thought we'd better go with something like that. Go ahead. So I'm going to try and walk you through our project. If we were on Cyprus right now and you were 17 foot tall or something like that, you'd be looking over the top of the fish seafood restaurant and you'd be, oops, you went too fast for me. Basically, what we have here is the 8 rooms that face back in this direction. And we talk about a 10 foot side yard or rear yard setback. These rooms actually do set back about 20 feet from the property line. What we're asking for is our driveway down to be right on the property line. Go ahead. The next one, this is what, if you were looking from the Sandcastle Hotel across the street, you'd see the old warehouse that MGM Studios used years ago and some of the old moguls, and which is used for parking now, and the actual bungalows. Go ahead. And so this is what you'll actually see when this is in place. And you will notice when we get into the floor plans that all of these rooms... I'm losing my power here, too. This is actually from the front. It shows the 1920s design that sits there. It isn't too attractive. There are a number of people that live there, and I'm sure they enjoy it. Go ahead. So from the ocean now, without the boardwalk in place, this is basically what you're going to see. This is the setback that sits way back in the back of the property. This is out in front with this Victorian style. And this is a continuation of actually our parking garage coming up out of the ground and creates our seawall for tsunami protection, et cetera. It actually will be covered by the same siding that we'll put on here. Our siding will be like a hardy plank, a composite material out of concrete, looking like obviously wood. Go ahead. And putting your boardwalk back in place. The shot was actually taken from the beach, and this is actually your boardwalk. Go ahead. So when you get around the other side, this is Mrs. Dixon's house. Again, here's our old warehouse. Go ahead. So simulating the hotel is basically what you're going to see. This would be on the property line, and then this is all set back on the other street. And if you step back onto the Hines Street, we're actually in the pier parking lot. This is Mrs. Dixon's house. I would show this is actually Mr. Ravenal's old business, and then back to our hotel. Go ahead. We have a series of rooms. We really copied a theory called the Beach House, and they were some gentlemen who built two major projects in about one in Half Moon Bay and one down in, I believe, Redondo or Manhattan. And what they created was a room that looked like a mini beach house. And so on the front, these are just the front suites that are on the front of the building. We basically have a one-bedroom suite. Go ahead, Joel. And our typical room is 470 feet, very elaborate showers, very elaborate tile work. And then on the side walls over here, we have a fireplace and then a complete little urban kitchen, which we'll show you in a second. Go ahead. These are the small rooms on the back. They're 345 square feet, still have a fireplace in them right here in the center, and look back at the town and toward the mountains. Go ahead. This is our little cross section, so I can show you what an urban kitchen looks like. Basically, a fireplace, over the fireplace, some kind of artwork, of course, television. And then in this area right here, we have a two-burner stovetop, a sink, a small refrigerator, and the microwave over here. Cabinetry looking very beachy, if you want to call it that. Go ahead. So basically, that's where we are now. This is us today. This is the old clam digger that we did not get to purchase. This is our property, of course, here. And Carolyn has been showing you the next slide. Go ahead. And this is the hotel dropped into place. We have no objections to the thought that the comments that Carolyn made about giving the front sand area to the public or needing public access. We believe that this is something new. Even though it's timeless in design, we think it's a great asset to Pismo. We have no objections to thing like the sandcastle next door. It was designed about 20 years ago, but it still looks fresh and clean. They've kept it up very nicely. What we think we're going to prepare for you next door is a real asset to your city that ties in with the timeless design of something like a boardwalk. Go ahead. Next. Okay, James Burkhouse, who is one of the owners as well, is going to address the parking garage and the things we're going to do with valet parking. And then I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is James Burkhouse. The project requires, we're 67 rooms. The project requires 71 parking spaces. That's one parking space per room, and then one parking space for each additional for 20 rooms, which would be an additional four. So it's 67 parking places plus four, which is a 71 with total. Four of those are required to be handicapped. Our project has 81, so we have 10 more than required. You enter the garage, the northeast corner, and go down a ramp. You circumvent the suit up to go to work, dressing area, and bathroom. On the other side of the ramp, we have a mechanical area for various equipment to run the hotel, and then also the equipment in this room for the elevators. We have two elevator banks that they can access any of the floors from the third floor down to the basement, and obviously the lobby. Two staircases, one on this corner and one over here, and then in this depiction, we have three handicap spaces. We need to add one more to be in compliance. There are 11 parking spaces along the north wall, or 13 along the north wall. There are 10 in each column here, so there's 20 along the west wall. There's 15 along the south wall. And in the middle, there are 33 spaces. So that gives us our 81 spaces. All spaces will be numbered. The guests will be assigned a parking space as they arrive. And depending upon the occupancy level of the hotel, they'll either be assigned a self-parking space or a valet parking space. You can flip it over one, Joe. So if the hotel is 90% occupied or less, we would need 60 spaces to accommodate our guests. And those spaces, isn't there one more? Can you flip it one more?
Right.
Oh, it won't go.
Pause it.
Okay. I'll just show you how it works. So those spaces, the 60 spaces you'd use to self-park would be along the wall, along this wall, and then here and in the middle. So that means there would be no cars parked in these spaces and no cars parked in these spaces. And that would be for self-parking. And that way you can pull a car in and out. There's no one blocking you. During the time frames where we're 90% occupied or more, we'd go into tandem parking. And we'd probably operate the hotel a day before we know we're going to get into that level, because we can tell by our reservations, where the whole garage would be valet parking. We wouldn't let guests park down there without valet. And we would obtain an additional 21 spaces by doing that, by adding these rows here. So as we park cars, they would be stacked in these columns, and they'd be stacked here. As in a self scenario, the guests would park their own car. In a valet scenario, they check into the front desk. They're assigned a room. They're assigned a parking space. Front desk rings for the valet parker, hands them the keys. The keys are tagged with a tag that has their name on it, their room number, the make of their car, and their license plate, and then the number of slot they're assigned to. Valet parker brings car downstairs and starts putting them in the slots they're assigned to. And obviously they would start stacking them as we fill up. When they want their car out, they give a coupon to the valet parker. He goes to the grid. There is a case that controls. It's a map just like this, and it's a box, a lock box. There's hooks. So the configuration, the way the keys are hung, are exactly as you see it here. He can very quickly see, if I'm going to pull this car out here, I need to get the keys to this. So he grabs two sets of keys, goes downstairs, pulls one car out, and brings the car out that was required by the guests, and brings it upstairs. And then reconfigures the keys back in the lockbox upstairs. So we always know what spaces are available, and we know how they're stacked, so we can efficiently pull the cars out.
How many have you added in those yellow? How many spaces are there?
Well, there's 81 spaces, including the yellow. So as we can accommodate 60 cars without using the yellow. Now, once we get into a situation where we want to valet park, we just start stacking the cars behind the other cars.
Good question. How would it operate once the hotel is in operation and you're in a valet parking mode? When the tenant or the person who's going to stay at the hotel drives up the hotel and gets from the point from exiting the car to the valet parker, would that take place on the street, or would there be...
It takes place in the portico chair. They pull up to the front of the hotel. A bellman would unload your bags. You go to the front desk. They assign you a parking place. The valet parker would take your keys, go out to your car, allow you to take whatever else you needed out, and then take your car downstairs. Okay. Well, so you would never access the garage once you give it to valet.
While you have that slide up, would you show me egress? You've got your pointer there.
Yes.
We're coming in where again?
The portico chair's here.
Yes.
So you'd swing around, pull in here.
Yes.
Ingress. And then as you exit, there's egress.
That now, are you making a 180-degree turn there for egress? Are you coming back up this right there, and then you're making a 180-degree turn there?
You could, or you can come back this way.
Okay, so that's two-way. There's a two-way pattern
in
there.
It's a two-way pattern.
Okay. Because that, if it was one way, that turn would be pretty tight.
Well, it could be, yeah. Yeah, but this, you can actually drive on this little path here.
Between...
This is actually 18 feet wide here.
Mm-hmm.
And these are 24.
The distance between...
And also on the beach in California, I can cite two hotels. Hotel Laguna, 65-room hotel in Laguna Beach, does exactly this. Also, the shutters on the beach at a 198-room hotel, they do exactly this. In fact, they stack them in the aisles. So this is how we do it. This is how we maximize our parking space in the facility. And it's ease for the guests, too, in terms of the retrieval of the car. Pismo Beach travel patterns, 90-degree occupancies, typically Fridays and Saturday nights, periodically throughout the year. And then June 15th through Labor Day in September, it could be 100% during the week, and definitely on the weekends. So we anticipate 100 to 130 days a year where we would be doing the valet-type parking.
No need to be doing valet parking when we're running, you know, 70% or less. And then we'd always anticipate, based on reservations, when we want to go into the valet mode. And so we probably do that 2 days ahead of time, so we make sure that all the cars are under valet control. Any other questions?
Anybody else? Any questions?
Nope.
Okay.
Are you going to leave this thing now? I mean, I have a question about this picture, these pictures. Okay. And I don't know.
We've got one more section to go. Okay. The presentation, if that's okay.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll save my question until later.
And today's Mark. I'm Joel Heiser. As I mentioned earlier, one of the partners in the project. And I'm going to talk to you about basically how we want to finance the project and how we're going to go about getting this built. In today's marketplace, as you know, the cost of construction continues to rise rapidly. Land cost on the beach is very expensive. And in order to make our project economically feasible and financeable in the marketplace, what we would like to do is we want to propose that we do it in a financing structure. And it's called a condominium hotel. And I'll explain to you exactly what a condominium hotel is. It's basically a transient occupancy commercial hotel that have the individual guest rooms sold from the project to individual owners of the guest rooms. Other than that, it's basically the same as a hotel. The guests would never know the difference. You have a lobby, you have a front desk registration, you have telephone service, maid service, housekeeping services, like any other hotel. It's just strictly an ownership structure. All the transient room rentals will fall under the transient occupancy tax. So you'll get the income tax. The city will for that. And in actuality, and around the country where these are being proposed very heavily in Florida and some other cities, some cities have actually adopted an ordinance to guarantee, you know, in perpetuity that there's only a minimal amount of use by the individual owners. We're not real sure that's really needed. Because most owners or people that invest in this are looking for a return on their investment, so they want to rent their unit to get revenue, and they also, if they use it too much, then they wind up losing a lot of tax benefits from the depreciation. The hotel condominium ownership structure is very common. It's been used in the hotel industry for over 50 years. I think it started with the Carlisle Hotel in New York over 50 years ago. In fact, it's also used, you probably may have some projects like this in your city, it's used for medical buildings, office buildings, industrial buildings, a lot of those are structured as condominium units and then sold off individually but still used in a commercial mode. Some examples of this, and James or Tony, I can't remember which one it was, commented on some others that are like this on the West Coast. I believe it was Tony. The beach house in Half Moon Bay and also in Hermosa Beach has this type of structure. Some ones that are currently under are just were converted. Squaw Peak in Squaw Valley was converted from a hotel to this particular structure just recently. Also, the lodge at North Star, which is currently under construction, is in this format. And there's a lot of other examples. The charter at Beaver Creek, which I was involved with over 20 years ago, is a luxury condo hotel project. The former Embassy Suites in Beaver Creek has been converted to a condominium hotel. Almost all of the hotels in Vancouver, Canada, are owned. All the Marriotts and the Hiltons and everything are all under this kind of structure. And it just kind of goes on and on. The new lodge at Vail, it's under construction. Lion's Head condo project and condo hotel project in Vail Valley also is going to be this format. It's the more of a permanent basis. This, to give you an idea of what we're looking, this is how the entire building lays out. These are the individual guest rooms on the ground level, and that's what will be sold. The balance of the space will be owned by the management company. And the developer and the management company, and will be held as a common area. The individual unit owners will get access, so they'll get some land use rights and easement rights to their units. But basically, the balance, all the public space will be owned by the management company.
And are the partners going to be the management company? Or
yes.
You
yes, we are.
Do you have to, if some point down the line the management company decides, once you get it filled and you get everything all done here and you're ready to move on to another project and you decide to sell this, do you have to get permission from all these individual owners?
No, you do not.
You have the right to act in their behalf.
Yes. Yeah, it's not the condominium association will not control the space. They will work in conjunction with the management company to maintain the building. Is basically how it works, and it'll be in a homeowners association dues, like in which the management company that owns the public space will have to contribute its share of the square footage and the fees every month to maintain the facility. But all the public space really is structured as just another condominium. And it'll have to pay its share of all the cost of operating the facility and just becomes a separate standalone condo unit. The management, we talked about that. In summary, basically, from a guest standpoint, they really won't be able to tell the difference from a normal hotel and this. The only real difference would be the ownership structure. Some hotels are owned by individually or by a corporation. Some are owned in partnership. Some are owned in as tenants in common. In this particular case, it's going to be owned under a condominium regime, but ultimately by individual owners of the units. Other than that, you really won't be able to tell the difference. And we would we'd be willing to provide at the next meeting or to the planning department a condominium map that depicts exactly how it all lay out, and we can do that shortly if we're approved by the commission.
Okay, thank you. Have anything further to present? Okay. Any of the commissioners have any questions of the applicant before we go to the public?
I want to know what there's, and I can't see it too good on there. I guess it's on drawing. Let me get it, because I want to ask this question. Okay, it's on sheet four. And on sheet four, there's a what appears to be on the top a rectangular structure that looks as if it were a.
So back here.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, on sheet four, and I'm looking at the rear north elevation.
Correct.
Okay, and there's a what appears to be a rectangular structure there, and it adds something like about 11 feet to the
height
to the total overall structure. What is that? Is that an observation deck or is that a resident?
No, you're right. It's an observation deck. We also have one in the front. If you look at the front section up here, we don't have a tower, but this one we have a tower for people like Mr. Bloom, who is losing his hair when he comes up to maybe enjoy the evening. It has some coverage out there midday. Actually, what's happened is we've had the 4th of July party there for the last 7 years, and we all hate to see it go and not own this piece of property anymore, so we thought we'd put something on the roof where we could get undercover and still watch the 4th of July fireworks.
Okay, so that structure up on top of there adds 11 feet, which makes the structure 42 feet 6 inches tall from the ground.
My understanding of structural heights from the Coastal Commission is that, like elevator towers and special features, which are not, but only a small percentage of the structure itself, really are not counted as the base structure. And so we thought we'd put a cupola up there that had some. We also thought people could possibly have small weddings or something like that up there.
Okay. Can you comment on that, Mr. Director?
Yeah, actually, the height limit is 35 feet, but with architectural extensions like cupolas, you can exceed that by 15% of the 35 feet. And the project at one elevation is does exceed the height limit, but it's conditioned to bring it down. So, and that'll
okay,
all be
reviewed. You've written a condition to bring
yes.
it.
And it sounds like the Coastal Commission concurred with that.
Yeah, they did. Good.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, not at this time. Thank
okay.
you.
Anyone else have any questions?
Just two quick ones on the financing. Is there a master lender on these projects, and then the people apply to participate, or do they go out and individually obtain the loans?
We do it all. We actually, in this particular case, Lehman Brothers is our primary lender in it, and then we actually will provide the financing for anybody. And what you'll find is that you'll a lot of local people, just for pure investment purposes, we've got a standing group of people who want to buy into it already. So. We'll provide everything for everybody.
And when, let's say, 50% of the units are rented at one point in time, the return to the investors, is it distributed across mm-hmm. every owner, or is it allocated by the specific unit that's rented out?
No, it's actually by the specific unit that's rented out.
And
so
who determines the allocation of peak units?
These two gentlemen are hotel operators in San Francisco, and I'm a builder from Pismo, so I'd better let them answer that
okay.
question.
You have a rotation system, and whichever unit gets rented, it goes to the bottom
okay.
of the list, and just gonna, unless someone specifically asks for a certain unit, and then that one will come back to the top, but immediately after it's rented, will go back to the bottom of the list.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But there's no pooling of revenues. It's all individual unit dispersed.
Thank you.
Any
How
other
does
questions?
This differ from a timeshare? They just don't own the unit.
Right.
You
right.
own one 356 of the unit.
Right.
They own the whole
versus
thing.
The entire unit.
It's airspace, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
You own the airspace. You don't own the
wall.
Any other questions before we open to the public? Okay, thank you. We might have you come back with some more questions. Do you have something to add, Rennie?
Yes. Can I make one point of clarification? Is tonight is the public hearing on the project, and after this, the applicant will submit a tentative map, a regular condo map, and we'll have a public hearing, and we'll have conditions for the map
mm-hmm.
and that such. So the applicant's talking about the financing, which is really important as far as the overview of the project, but we'll have a subsequent application and a public hearing for the actual map.
So what action is the commission, you're looking for the commission to take tonight on the project?
The actual coastal development permit for
okay.
the project.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have another mm-hmm. question of the applicant before we go to the public.
Questions.
Can I do that,
yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Okay. I'm concerned a little bit about the architectural design. And, okay, we have another project that's quite modern, okay, and that is the Benson project that you're probably familiar with.
I haven't seen it, but I've known about it for a long time.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's got steel roof and this kind of thing, and a little bit more modern. And I'm concerned about the property adjacent to yours, okay, and how it's putting a big burden, I feel, on that piece of property to architecturally tie this historical type Nantucket. That's what I'm going to call it.
Sure.
design. With the modern over there, it's going to take some special architectural tie-ins, I think, to take this structure and tie it in with the Benson structure. And I know you may not be worried about this, but it's what I'm kind of interested in your point of view about this tie-in. I mean, you have a patio on that corner there. Okay, it would seem to me that the next project that goes in, which I'm assuming is going to be a rather large hotel too, in order to make it pencil out, maybe that they would have to put a courtyard kind of adjacent. You sure would want a wall separating this thing with a big structure that would tie together. I'm not an architect, okay? You can probably tell that. And I'm concerned your views of how this might tie together with the adjacent property and what's planned for the future in the downtown area?
You know, I can't answer all of that, but I can say that originally we had this hotel designed to come way out here in the front so that whatever was built here basically could build right up to us. And it seemed, I know in dealing with Caroline and Randy, it seemed like we were creating a box that we were just boxing ourselves in. And it really, that was when we were 72 units. And we thought, gee, originally when we brought this whole project to the city the first time, we had Mrs. Dixon under option, and we were running a little over 2,000 houses here on the coast, and our architectural styles change. We're doing a lot of craftsmen, and we've gone back to an old style of architecture because the materials we can use today don't deteriorate like the old wood materials that we used years ago. We feel it's timeless design. We feel that a beachfront hotel that looks like this is going to be as attractive today as it will probably be 50 years from now, where the architecture of the two next door will be very dated. You can actually depict them as being a 60s or 70s style of architecture. So I haven't seen Mr. Benson. Who is it?
Benson.
Yeah, I haven't seen his architecture. I really apologize for that. I should probably have looked at it. We were more concerned with it when we thought we were going to do the whole project. And he may be very modern. I don't think Pismo Beach, it really is a modern city. I think it's kind of an eclectic city. The other side of the boardwalk over here, the pier parking lot on the other side, is kind of an old style. I think we tie in better with that than something modern. I know Cypress Landing's fairly modern. This just has so much more detail to it.
I think you made a good point in that. I mean, I can tell by the way you're dressed. You're a traditional clothing dresser. You've got the button-down Oxford shirt. that style will always be in style. And I think I agree with you in that this hotel, while others will be because of whatever is the particular trend that particular decade or whatever is going to look like that. I mean, this is timeless. I mean, this could be at any particular time. So,
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for.
Thank you very much for your explanation.
Sure.
We struggle with the layout, and this layout, it just seemed to be better for the property, and it's also very friendly to the property next door, because what we were concerned about is opening view corridors to our guest rooms, which we've maximized by doing this. And by our layout, what we've done to the property next door, instead of blocking them by building the property out, we've opened a view corridor for them also. So it's compatible with them to the next door. And if you look at the design, if you go to Santa Monica and look at the shutters, they're the same design, and they're surrounded by different kinds of property. And actually, it's a very pleasant environment with the different styles.
Would you be amenable, let's say, before you get this project completed, okay, amenable and another project would to come in next door, that if they wanted to make one big continuous patio type thing, tear down the wall and or not build the wall and make it an adjoining common thing, would that fit in your financial plans and all that kind of thing?
We would probably look at complementing amenities then.
Yeah. Okay.
We have a jacuzzi, and they may want a pool. So
yeah. Okay.
Doors open to that discussion.
Good.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open it to the public. Oh, I'm sorry.
I've been
you had a
trying
question.
For
sorry.
10 minutes to get the question out to the director.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Let's see if I can remember what it was now.
The procedure. Were the commission to approve this project this evening, where does it go from here? Does it have to go get a blessing from the Coastal Commission? And I understand the track map. What I'm talking about is the project itself.
The project itself, approved tonight, we send it up to the Coastal Commission for a notice of final action. And it's within the appeal zone of the within our coastal plan. So what would happen? Is it, if it was approved tonight, we would send it up to the Coastal Commission. There would be an appeal period. An outside person could appeal it, or the Coastal Commission themselves could appeal it.
Not a public hearing at the Coastal Commission unless it's appealed.
Only if it's appealed.
And then, of course, the track map comes back to us and goes to the council.
Right.
And it would be potentially subject to the same...
Right. It goes through the same process.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I have a card from is Mr. Studer. Is that right? Who gave me this blue card?
I gave it to you. Somebody said it there.
Oh, okay. I guess that person's not here. Anyone from the public like to speak?
My name's Jackie Musgrove. I live at 160 Stimson, which is right across the street from the proposed facility. And I rent the house from my cousin that my great-grandmother built in the 40s. And so this has been in our family for a really long time, and we've had a great view of the ocean for a long, long time. And where this facility sits blocks all of my view across the street. I mean, I look out directly into the parking garage right now, and it's not great, but I can see the sun setting in the evening over the over those houses that are it's a beautiful hotel. But I, when I look at this picture, all I'm going to see out my front patio is the backside of the hotel. And it's not what I want to look at. And it's not, I'm not going to be able to see the sun come down over Avila Beach anymore. Okay. And so it is having an adverse impact, and our family has received no notice of this project.
Okay, well, let me address that with staff.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when this comes across our desk all the time about protecting a resident's view from another project, and we don't have the authority to do that. We do not enforce views. If somebody builds a house in front of somebody else, if they're within all the zoning ordinances, they've done everything they can do, we're not compelled to do that because we have to look at the law. And how that law, and if these gentlemen do everything that they need to do to make that possible, to build that structure, we're sort of powerless in that. But I will ask the staff in regards to noticing, was this project noticed to people surrounding the area? Or?
Well, I have the labels here, and it shows that it was. Now, what happens after a notice leaves our office and hits the box, We can't, you know, we do our best, and we posted the site, and we ran it in the newspaper as well. So,
okay,
we've done what we were supposed to do.
Could I ask if the property owner's names are on the list?
Mary Avila.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, because they were. I don't know what happened. I don't know when that notice would have gone to them, but when I called them, because I saw the note on the property across the street from us, and I went over and looked at it, and I called them.
Well, it appears that we've done everything we can do, because, I mean, she is on our mailing list, and if she wasn't, then we'd make sure that she was. So. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The other question is, there are some residents here that live in those small cottages, and they would like to know what the time, they're interested in the time frame.
Well, they're welcome to come forward and speak. Are you speaking for them?
I would like to speak on their behalf.
Okay, what's the question?
What is the time frame for their evictions from their properties?
Okay, let me ask that.
That would be up to the applicant. I mean, the permit, should you approve this permit tonight, the permit's good for 2 years, and the applicant can then apply for another 2 years beyond that. So.
Well, the applicant still needs to go through a plan check review with all the construction documents and all the engineering and, dare I say, the corrections, and then maybe some more corrections. I mean, the odds of anybody putting a shovel in the ground here in the next 48 months, I would say, are not. That would be optimistic, I would think, 48 months, wouldn't it?
Probably 3 years. 3 years.
I got a shovel in the back of my truck.
These people are concerned about, they live there now, so let's try to give them a little ballpark. And we can't guarantee what this time frame would be. But the reality is the applicant still has a lot of approval processes to go through. So what do you think is a safe assessment? A couple of years before this?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Let me just ask the staff this question.
I want to clarify the question, if I could.
Well, I think I know the question. You want to know when you're going to have to move out of your place, right?
Ask for best case and worst case. What do you think the soonest and what do you think the longest it would be? Give us a time frame.
I think the applicant would be better to address.
Probably the applicant could answer that better because
yes.
I don't have a.
If
we're approved tonight, we will start a tentative tract map tomorrow and have it back to you, and then it depends on how long it takes to process the tentative tract map. It's been 7 years to October since we bought it. We finally have come upon something we like. It's a tough one to answer because I don't know how fast the city of Pismo Beach. I talked to my architects today. They've got 90 days to first plan check, but that we won't even start the architecture until we know, you know, that we've gone through the appeal period. So we're probably how long the appeal period? 30 more days past this, plus let's say 120 days in architecture. So you're, you know, 170 days, and then we go through the plan checks as you're talking about. So I would say that, you know, it's about a year out at the earliest. And I hope it's not four years out. But in Santa Maria, the orchid projects that we've been building out have been taking us as long as 7 to 10 years to get off the ground. So this one is well planned, and we hope that maybe sometime within the next 12 months we could actually break ground. At the earliest, 18 months on the outset. I will state that I understand the tenants. They have a great location for not a lot of money, and it's a great place to be. We do have on all their rental agreements, we have a 30-day clause. They've also signed their rental agreements just stating that this is a teardown, so it's not something they're not aware of. But they don't have to figure they're going to be moving out of there for at least a year, I'm sure.
Yeah. You spoke to that issue at the very beginning, and that had to do with the fact that this is low-income housing. Is that correct? And
I think she said that it wasn't.
It's not. It looks to me like these things were built originally. They're grandfathered, but they were originally.
They don't have to be designated low-cost housing, I don't believe. They just have to be rented for a certain amount, a certain affordable amount of money.
It's on page 10 of 23 of the addendums. It's actually one of the mitigation measures that there be a plan acceptable to the community development director for providing relocation assistance to moderate income and below tenants. Plan shall include reasonable moving expenses and assistance in finding new homes. And so the applicant would need to present a plan to Randy to review and approve before offering something to the tenants.
10 of
63? 10 of 23.
23 in the addendum.
Okay. In the addendum.
Ah. Okay. Well, I think that's clear. There will be some assistance as well. It's got to be... The applicant's required to do that, and the community development director will look at that and make sure that's done as part of the applicant's conditions. So hopefully that answered. And I do understand. I mean, I would be sorry to lose that view, too, but unfortunately we're...
Right now, I mean, they got to go on, but it's going to be a nice place, too. But right now I think we do live best for the best right.
Well, the good news is you have maybe probably another year.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else from the public like to speak? Okay, we'll close it to the public, bring it back to the commission. I'll just start. I just want you to know, I think this project really was, if not the first, one of the first of our, when you bring up concept review, and I know that I looked at it. I think maybe Commissioner Aaron might have looked at it. I think anybody else was here then.
I didn't look at it.
But it was some time ago, and I remember we talked about the parking going around, and I think we also talked, if I remember, because I've seen a lot of projects, I think, did you ever have was there going to be a pool at one time? I remember we talked about the sand blowing into the pool, and so it looks like even way back when, I mean, some of those things maybe helped you with the project. I think it's a great project, and I am sorry for the change that it will affect the public, but... I think if something is going to go in there, I like the style. I think the style is pretty timeless, and I think that it will be a benefit to the public in that they'll have access into that into the courtyard. I like the idea of them going, being able to walk through. I like the idea of a kiosk. I think that would probably be a nice thing to have. I like the idea of the tandem parking, the valet. I think that makes sense. And the as you will quickly understand when you get into the hotel business. I mean, the business changes so drastically, good news, bad news, from the summer months to the winter months, that having that flexibility in there, I think, will be of a real good value. And it's a great way to solve a parking problem that could be very difficult to come up with a parking spaces otherwise. So I don't have any problems with it. As we move forward, the residents there will be notified in ample time, and there'll be some assistance to help them move as well. So I like that as well.
I'll go next.
Okay.
I think it's a great project too. I'm supportive of it. I'm just going to state that I echo Chairman Sorger Fry's sentiments. I do want to comment on a couple of the variances. What was that?
That was Wayne King. So.
I'm supportive of the variances. I think we can make the findings support the findings for both the side yard and it's the front, I believe, or the rear. Okay. And I think there's another comment or finding we're supposed to make in regards to the facility or the project being coastal dependent.
Yes, I was just about to add that because I failed to include it in the...
Yeah, and I think it's clearly a coastal-dependent project, and there's no argument that you can make that finding. And lastly, in regards to the finding associated with the height, I think that stepping it back achieves the intent, and I'm supportive of that as well. So just in summary, I think it's a great project, and I'd like to see it move forward.
Mr. Burns, do you want to weigh in now?
Certainly. In general... our city is an excellent place, and it is an excellent financial situation because our city allows reasonable projects to move forward. Our general plan is, and I'm sure Mr. Anderson will agree, is a very well-written document. And the sections that specifically apply to these types of developments, massing of buildings, et cetera, are keeping this community moving in a very pedestrian-forward way. Specifically, this project is very well designed. The gentlemen are obviously very professional and very sophisticated. This is not the first of these we've seen. We have one opening. We've had others in for conceptual review. This is certainly the way it is moving. I think this is just a
page one of the general plan.
Page one?
I think we'll take a break first.
We the people...
I like the subterranean parking. I think that's a nice vision for the area. It's good for your guests. And I hope that you have to use your valet 365 days a year.
Great. Would someone like to entertain a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, that's all right. I made one tonight, but I'll make this one.
I'll make
one. I make a recommendation that we approve the project with adoption of the resolution 020138 with item C that I recommended earlier. And with that, I'll look for a second.
I second the motion. Just want to point out that we're also supporting the two variances that are requested, both the variance from the 5 side yard setback as well as the 10-year, rear setback as well.
I'll speak to the motion. Absolutely, yeah. I'm very satisfied that the findings for variance are there.
Do you need the condition for the coastal use as well?
I need to add the finding related to the coastal dependent use of the project. This would be finding number 18. The development of the oceanfront hotel is a coastal dependent facility and exempt from the replacement housing requirements of General Plan Policy H-13. That would be finding number B-18. And actually, that numbering might be a little off because, Commissioner Ehring, you rightly noted that we had repeated findings 8 and 9 by twice. So it would be probably be number 16, 15 or 16.
Well, can I just state that my second includes that finding?
Okay.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Congratulations, gentlemen.
Thanks again to your city staff. They're marvelous to work with.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I would commend staff for the work that the applicant and staff did together on this. It was just excellent. You guys are always doing great work. This is a particular example.
Okay, do we have any correspondence other than what we've noted we've heard for the various projects?
Just what we've noted. I do have one item I'd like.
Okay.
Before we close, Mr. Chairman?
Well, wait, he's got an item.
Okay.
December is coming up, and our second meeting falls between the week of Christmas and New Year's, and right now we don't have anything scheduled for that, and And I want to get a concurrence that we should cancel that meeting.
Absolutely.
Because that's a difficult
week. I so recommend.
That's the general plan.
Well, if you interpret it correctly, it actually requires it requires a meeting on both Christmas Eve and New Year's Day.
Enjoy.
I think we're all in agreement that that'd be fine.
I picture this Yule log on TV with Bradford Anderson
with a Santa hat.
By himself, with a general Santa
right
next to him.
And a Santa hat.
Okay.
I do have something before we close, Mr. Chairman. The next meeting of November the 8th, I would like to get, if possible, as much of the planning packet as I can by October 31st. I will be out of the country November 1 through November 8. My plans are, I get back into L.A. about noon on the 8th. I plan to be at that meeting, jet lag or not, but if I could get the packet before I leave on the 1st so I can review as much of it as possible, whatever's available to me at that point.
Now, just carry your computer.
You won't be able to receive any kind of email or anything where you're going.
Yes, I will. Just put the email into.
So we could email.
Oh, I would.
This type
well, where I am going specifically is Samoa, and it takes about 20 minutes to actually log on. So I would have. I can get email, but I can't download anything. Okay.
Are you planning to review the packet on vacation?
Sure.
Wow, I'm impressed.
What else am I going to do? I can't surf at night.
We'll try to get you as much of that information.
Thank you.
All
and
right.
If I'm late to the meeting, it's because I'm cutting through the traffic, but I'll be here.
Okay. All right, anything else? Okay, we'll adjourn. Thank you.
Oh, this is... These are where we're supposed to review.